you had to read, like, actually, it's funny, you know, we're going to talk about X-Men today, but you had to read 5 to 6 different books to figure out what was going on in the X-Men universe, which was, like, asinine.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Well, no, it made
like,
money.
What if I don't want to read X-Force? I don't really like any of the characters in there, but if I don't read X-Force, I don't understand what's going on in Uncanny and regular X-Men and then Super X-Men and then Giant Size X-Men and then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle X-Men.
And holy shit, it's the fucking X-Men.
Yeah, holy shit, it's the fucking X-Men. And surprise, it's the X-Men and whatever other X-Men Quarterly.
Yeah, but Marvel's always done that. They've always had where... They're like, hey, you like the storyline? Well, I guess you're going to pick up New Warriors 21. You're like, but I don't want to do that. We're like, well, you're fucked then.
Because Wolverine's in New Warriors 21, exactly. So you got to know what Wolverine's doing. He might be wearing a new pair of underpants that you've never seen before.
That's like, it would be like if you went to a drug dealer and was like, hey, I'm here for my pot. And he's like, cool, here's your pot. But in order to get the pot, you need to buy this pair of blue jeans. Well, I don't need blue jeans. Well, then you're not going to get the pot.
Yeah, exactly.
But I want the pot. Yeah, then buy the blue jeans. Oh, motherfucker. I guess I'm buying blue jeans. That's
yeah, it always seems like Marvel uses those crossovers to try to boost those weak-selling books by forcing you to pretty much go, here you go. You got to buy it.
Yeah.
So because you have to know. You have to.
DC try that with, like, No Man's Land? Because that's kind of similar.
So, that's what we're talking about today on Geeks Under the Influence. We're going to get into the X-Men comics, the cartoons, all of the, like, variations of X-Men, X-Factor, and all that on this episode. We're going to save all the movies and everything for the next episode, which we'll get into that, and also the new Age of Apocalypse movie and our feelings about that. So we're sticking primarily with the comics and the cartoon and the...
Wait a minute, we're talking about feelings? Because nobody signed me up for feelings. I didn't come here for a fucking encounter group.
We'll start on the second half. We'll get you nice and drunk first. Don't worry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, then it's fine.
You can be Maurice when we're...
Yeah, yeah. The second half will be not Sean Lucas, it will be Maurice. So.
I don't know. This is a holiday weekend, man. This is the long haul. Yeah. The marathon. I don't know if Maurice needs to be coming out at like 5:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, we're recording the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend. So we've been drinking a little bit. We grilled out just before we started recording. So we're ready to roll on this episode of Geeks Under the Influence. Welcome.
Under the Influence.
I think the X-Men was one of the first things that we mentioned when we talked about doing this podcast because so many of us are fans of the X-Men. And it's really nice that the first episode that we do in the new podcast room is the X-Men because personally, X-Men was one of the bigs for me when I was growing up in comic books. That was one of the first real comic runs that I got obsessed with was the X-Men because they're just really dynamic and just the – it's – why I like Joss Whedon is that it's a cast that you're looking at. It's not an individual person that you're following. It's a cast of characters that you have to follow and their interpersonal relationships. And it adds for really good drama, even in comic book form. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. All you guys are big X-Men fans, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's like you were just saying, that was kind of the first comic I really started reading, following was X-Men. Those two books, G.I. Joe and X-Men, and that's why I'm the fanboy that I am today. It's because of that.
G.I. Joe and X-Men aren't entirely far off because it's a bunch of people that are really good at, like, fucking shit up and wear really fun costumes.
Well, I'll defend the 80s Larry Hama run of G.I. Joe. I still think it's fucking kick-ass. I have all the trades. Yeah, it's better than you would think it would be for a G.I. Joe run.
Larry Hama was really good anyways. Like, his later career is defined by G.I. Joe. And matter of fact, before he was even a book, he was right. He wrote all the bios and everything for the cards that the toys were packaged on.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. No, his jam is G.I. Joe. Larry Hama wrote, I can't remember what exactly he did, but he was well established comic book writer.
He actually did some X-Men stuff too.
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah.
I remember like 5 or 6 years ago, the RVA con. And they had Claremont and Larry Hama there. I was like, there's my childhood right there. And they were literally set up next to each other.
Yeah.
So
Chris
I got
Claremont
my two most important issues. I got each of them to sign. I was like, there you go. Check.
Yeah. John Byrne, John Byrne, Chris Claremont, Marv Wolfman, George Perez.
I knew
those like four guys really defined. Because I like Teen Titans. and they did a Teen Titans X-Men crossover in like 81.
Now, let's do the panel real quick before we get any deeper into this. I'm, of course, the Hobbit, host of Geeks Under the Influence, and kind of driving this shitberg into an hour and a half of wonderful programming for you listeners. Next to me, on my left, is Mr. Hunter.
Hello, hello.
That luckily you were able to join us. You were kind of touch and go on being able to be on this episode.
So. Yeah, I usually don't have to work on Sundays, and unfortunately I was scheduled, so I had to run out of work and get here in time.
No, but it worked out. You
start drinking as soon as possible.
Yeah, exactly. So you had to catch up a little bit. And next to Hunter is Mr. That Piece of Shit, Sean Lucas.
Oh, I'm Mr. That Piece of Shit.
Mr.
Okay.
That Piece of Shit.
It sounds official.
Yeah. Well, this feels with the table and everything.
Oh, it's funny, you married into the family that actually gave me the nickname. Oh. Thanks.
Was it though?
I'm sure you didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah, we're sitting around a table with a tablecloth. It feels more formal of a setting. So, Mr. Piece of Shit, Sean Lucas.
Take the fucking tablecloth out. You piece of shit, Sean Lucas. That's what it is.
Yeah. So you're going to be our encyclopedia of knowledge today.
Yeah, because, I mean, my run of X-Men can actually vote. I mean, it goes 18 years, yeah.
I can say the same thing, unfortunately.
At least we know what your run of X-Men would feel about a registration act. And who would vote on that?
Well, I definitely wouldn't be voting for Trump, I could tell you that.
No, no.
Well, the registration act, the X-Men stayed out of, so.
Yeah.
No. You're thinking of that. We're talking about a different
mutant registration.
Yeah,
registration.
Yeah, I think of
Days of Future Past type.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the.
That's not so good, Al. Yeah.
No, Days of Future Past. Okay.
And finally, our fourth panelist for this episode is Mr. Lowdown Brown MacGyver.
What's up, guys?
You are almost fully moved in with your wife now.
Technically.
Yeah. You still got to move.
He's
the kitty.
He's been moved into his wife for a while now, but I think they're sharing the same domicile now.
Yeah.
Well, my shit's at my old place, and like my cat is going to be at the new place, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You still getting used to that term, my wife? Like,
no. I actually did have a problem.
All right.
What I had a problem with was the fiance part.
Oh yeah.
Like the fiance, it was like
my girlfriend,
but like literally, once I got married, it was like my wife. It's like, yeah, okay. Like it just was
not
a problem.
I can just call wife now. Yeah.
Yeah, like. Fiance was the motherfucker.
So your ribs healed up from all the elbowing every time you said girlfriend instead of fiance?
No, she knew better than do that. I'd take that on her later. So.
Yikes.
So, first off, before we get into anything else, what was the big book for X-Men that got you guys kind of tied into X-Men in the first place?
I can easily say Mutant Massacre.
Yeah.
That was actually one of the first book I really picked up. And all I know is you see a bunch of marauders and you start mowing down the Morlocks. And at that point, I was like, I need to figure out exactly what's going on with this and backtrack from Mutant Massacre. But Mutant Massacre was what started my curiosity.
Okay. So.
First thing I think I ever read was 138, which was Eulogy.
Okay.
I read 138 and 139. And 139 was the first issue with Kitty Pryde because, you know, she's cute, she's spunky, she's 14, and she walks through walls. And from then, I think I missed 40. 40 was the, she was in the mansion alone on Christmas.
With the alien.
Oh, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah. And then 41 and 42 were Days of Futures Past. And then I just didn't see it in comic racks. Because this is back in the days of the rack jobbers. Which is what they used to call the guys who stocked the comic book carousels that you would see in the drugstores and the 7-Elevens and stuff. You know, if you didn't see the books there, then you didn't know about it. You didn't see it. I mean, you didn't know that there were comic book stores, but we didn't really know about them yet. And they were in other parts of town. And Mechanicsville, Virginia can be a little isolated because it's 10 miles away from the city, but nobody wants to go to the city. Unfortunately, 30 years later, that still pretty much holds true.
And nobody really wants to go to Mechanicsville either. Yeah.
God, no.
There's no comic book stores in Mechanicsville?
It really wasn't in the 80s. I mean, there was only about, in the Richmond area, there's maybe two or three comic book stores in the 80s. Nostalgia Plus, Dave's, and there was probably something way out in Southside.
Richmond Comics over on Southside.
Yeah.
Wait, that was there in the 80s?
Yep. That's where I started my
Nostalgia
X-Men
Plus
run.
Was there in the 80s?
Yep.
Yeah. Nostalgia Plus actually used to be on Patterson, where the old post office is in the area known as the Avenues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On this episode of Back in My Day,
we're going to talk about... I mean, I was not trying to, but, you know, just trying to tell you, like, yeah, and then I lost track for a few years, and 171 was where I picked up again.
Yeah.
And that was the introduction to Rogue.
The cartoon was really my first exposure to the X-Men. Then I went out and got, you know, books, and one of the first, like, runs that I read was the Dark Phoenix saga.
That's the way to start.
That's a great, yeah. I mean, Claremont has been my boy ever since, like, because...
The combination of Claremont and Byrne, yeah, by the way, yeah, 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 is just, like, great storytelling and amazing, yeah, art. Like, I mean, that's the way to go.
And yeah. Byrne is almost as good of a writer as he is an artist.
Yeah. But, yeah, that run and with the Hellfire Club, and that's why I was so excited to hear about the Hellfire Club being in First Class.
Yeah.
Though they definitely didn't have the same tone as the Hellfire Club from the comics.
Not so much.
Yeah.
No. But, I have to agree with the Hobbit on that. Pretty much when I first came into the X-Men, it was the Saturday morning cartoon show. Like, I mean, because at that point I was like 8, 9.
It was a little bit of age difference, I understand.
Yeah, yeah. We got two old fuckers and we got two relatively close fuckers, even though I'm the youngest one here today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have fuckers who wants to be good fuckers.
But, and so it was actually weird. Like, I was watching that and I was watching the Spider-Man cartoon at the same time. So that actually got that's what got me into both characters was watching the X-Men cartoon. Oh, it's a comic? Go find comics. That's a comic? Go find comics.
You know, yeah, like, 92 was a good time for, like, animated comic book shows because, like, the Batman the Animated Series came out around the same time.
Well, see, I knew about Batman, like I said, long before from the movie and then the Adam West show. So I was clear. I was good on that. But I didn't know who the fuck X-Men were until I saw the show. And it's like, new Saturday morning cartoon show coming out.
As somebody that had been reading X-Men for several years before the animated show came out, it was really awesome to actually see these stories, like, put on.
And done well.
Yeah. Like,
done well. Like, because I've gone, and since then, like I read the Phoenix saga. And then I got into some solo Wolverine issues because there was a early to mid 90s, there was a single run of Wolverine where he had the bone claws and all that stuff came out. And I read some of that.
Yeah, it was about 93.
That kind of turned me off a little bit because that wasn't really good writing.
Don't get me started on the bone claws.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, where he's got a family, and that's what they went with the shitty movie, which we're not going to go into this episode, but they kind of took from that for that movie where he's got the family and they come to get him, he's got the bone claws. It's fucking terrible. So that kind of turned me off from X-Men a little bit just because all I had really read up to that point was pretty much like I did, because the Phoenix Saga came out around that time.
Yeah.
So I'd read that, and I read a couple just random standalone issues of X-Men.
Before I read Dark Phoenix, I had read, like, basically issues that my friends had that weren't
in order. It was just
So I remember there was something about they were in space and there was Lalandra and there was some stuff going on there. And I don't remember that. It was just an issue.
They did the Lalandra thing pretty well during the comic books or during the animated series.
Yeah.
The funny thing was that the animated series, it started with 92. I remember being in college in like 93 and wanting to watch it on Saturday mornings and going into the communications building at George Mason, where I went to school, because my dorm wasn't actually that far from there. Because in my apartment, we couldn't get Fox 5 very well at all, because we had an antenna. They didn't have cable hooked up in the dorms.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go in on a Saturday morning. I would go into a random classroom in the communications building, which was unlocked, and sit in a classroom and that had a TV in there and would watch. And I knew it got good reception because I checked it out one day when there was nobody in there. And so I would go in there at like 10 in the morning and watch, hungover as shit, before I went to breakfast and watched cartoons, hoping that a security guard or somebody wouldn't come in here going, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I'm like,
"Watching cartoons."
I'm watching cartoons.
Obviously watching cartoons. Like, Stop bothering me.
I'm not hurting anybody. Leave me the fuck alone. I'm watching cartoons.
If you want me to leave, I will. But yeah, can we at least wait till a commercial break?
A man so dedicated to not getting laid that he would break into buildings to watch cartoons.
Haven't we gone over his dedication to not getting laid over Batman and the DC episode? Like, there's been like multiple episodes of John Lucas not getting laid.
The thing is, it's like, this was back in the time that if you didn't get, you know, there were no DVRs, there was, you know, it's VCRs.
You had to watch it when you had it.
Yeah,
you had to watch it when it was on.
If you didn't watch it when it was on, guess what? You didn't fucking see it.
Isn't that just such a foreign concept nowadays? Where I'm just done.
See,
like,
you don't.
And it's funny because fear of missing out is a bigger thing now than it was when I was younger. It's like, you know, it's like now everybody's like, oh, dude, I don't want to miss anything. And it's like, you have things that make sure that you won't miss them. You
like know, the internet. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The fear comes from when things happen where they like their access points are taken from, like, oh, their phone dies, or like they, if they want to watch something right at that point, they can't because for something happened that now they can't access it. Like, for us, the fear point was real because if you weren't there at a certain time to watch it,
you're screwed.
Until it became syndicated, you were like, yeah, I'm fucking done.
Also, I think we dealt with it better because we were so used to missing stuff because life, you know, that you are just raised in a circumstance where I'm not going to see every episode of this series because I'm not. Like, life happens. I have, you know, Boy Scouts on Wednesdays or something, and, you know, there's something happening. So you just get used to it. Whereas in this day and age, the idea of missing an episode of one of your favorite shows is impossible.
Oh, like, I remember I was on a beach vacation and the finale of Seinfeld was coming on, and we were at a restaurant and it was about 10 minutes about to start, to the point where I left the table and went to the bar where they had the TV on just so I could catch up with that because there was no DVR. I hadn't said record it. So I'm just left the table and just sitting at the bar watching the Seinfeld finale.
It's also the last episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, exactly.
You kind of didn't want to miss that.
Explaining that, like, I know we're eating right now. I'm just going to just exit for a little while and just stare at this TV at the bar, okay?
Sorry.
Yeah.
But at least for me, it really hasn't changed because, like you said, there's no way you knew you were going to make every episode. So when you're younger, you missed episodes. You did. It's just how it worked. You know, either your mom's like, no, we're doing this tonight. You're like, fuck. Okay, mom. I don't want to feel like getting in trouble, so I've got to obviously do what you tell me. Nowadays, I don't really worry about not being there. I know there's DVR and all that, but it's because I know I'm going to see it. Like, if it takes me 3 weeks to catch up on a show, it doesn't bother me.
That's what I'm saying. You get DVR, right? And just marathon the shit out of it.
I didn't mind missing an episode after a while when I was younger, just so much as I don't mind missing it now. Not because I can watch it, because I'm just used to the mindset of not basing where I need to be at off of a time frame for a TV show. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
It just never was part of my life where I had to be somewhere to watch something at a certain time.
Now, the difference, though, is you can take that luxury of not seeing it, and I've had this discussion with multiple people, stay off of social media if you're going to take it, because I'm sorry to say, shit's going to get spoiled, and people still complain about it. They're like, I can't believe, like,
you went
on Facebook an hour after Game of Thrones, and you're shocked that somebody revealed some shit? Yeah.
I remember being being in the hospital in 93 because I got diagnosed with diabetes, and it was over a weekend, and I was actually supposed to go back to school that morning.
Way to be a big downer on the podcast.
Well, hold on. Yeah. Hold on. There's a point to all of this. So, but I was in, you know, and woke up early on a Saturday morning, and, you know, was watching cartoons on Fox, and I was like, oh, cool. I actually get to see an X-Men for once. And, of course, it was a rerun of one of the episodes that I'd actually already seen. But I still got to see it. I think it was the Wolverine Sabretooth one.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, I know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
See, and that's the thing. I didn't give
from
a fuck
season
about
one, yeah.
I didn't give a fuck about reruns when it came to that, any of that stuff.
No. But if I'd seen it before and then, like, well, I hadn't, you know, maybe it's one that I haven't seen. That's what the hope was. Hopefully it's one that I hadn't seen because, you know, they didn't really, I don't know if they ran them in episodic order or whatnot or how that all worked, but I just know that it was in January and I saw one that I had actually seen before. They actually had those all on Netflix a couple of years ago, but they're not currently on Netflix.
On
and
YouTube.
I watched some of them. Yeah.
That's something that blows my mind too, is that I know that if they did a proper release of all the X-Men series on DVD and Blu-ray,
I would buy the shit out of it.
I have Wolverine and the X-Men. I have that on DVD on Blu-ray. Like, and that actually was a really good series too.
That wasn't bad. And also X-Men Evolution wasn't that bad either.
No, that was a really good show too.
It wasn't as good as like the early X-Men series,
but
like making them all teenagers and then having like the, you know, the
Wait, Wolverine's a teenager?
Yeah, well, no, Wolverine was a teacher.
Yeah, he was a teacher. Okay.
But everybody else was a teenager. And then they had like the two, and they all went to school. They all went to the same school. And like, obviously, the X-Men lived in the mansion. And the Brotherhood the Brotherhood of Mutants lived in this rundown house. And, oh, yeah.
It was, I've never.
It was
Evolution.
X-Men Evolution, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, there's got to be a distribution issue or something like that.
Why haven't they?
Because why haven't they? It seems like common sense.
Like I said, they did put Wolverine and the X-Men on Blu-ray, and I got that a couple years ago.
Yeah, but that didn't come out until what, like the 2000s era.
Is it good?
Yeah, actually, it was pretty solid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again,
some of us want the old school first.
I do. I mean, obviously, you can get on YouTube with a shitty, grainy version. They do have them on YouTube, like, so for those that want to watch it, you can see.
It's weird as many movies they've released, they haven't just been like, fuck it, make this awesome kick-ass box set.
Fox must be like, okay, well, we can release a bunch of movies, but we can't release the show?
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I want to just really quickly to Fox, because you know that they listen to this.
Of course. Fox execs are all over our dicks.
I know historically you guys are actually really good about listening to fans about what to keep on the air. Historically pretty good about that. They don't cancel stuff before it's time and all that. And so I just want to say to Fox is that if you want to just make lots of money on a property that you already have the licensing for, then maybe release like a multi-disc like box set Blu-ray thing of the original X-Men series and I will buy it. I'm telling you now. I don't know how much you're going to sell it for. I will buy it.
I'll buy it too.
I'll buy it. And I mean, it's what? Like, that was, they had three seasons? So you're looking at what? Like, six?
Oh, no. They had like seven seasons.
Yeah. Seven seasons?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're looking at seven times 25, 26. So yeah, you're looking at, yeah. That's a few hundred episodes.
It's pretty stupid. They haven't released it yet.
Yeah.
So.
I forgot it was that long.
Yeah.
Damn. I was actually, today, I got up and decided to watch Pride of the X-Men again. I watched it on YouTube. And I know
you're so proud of yourself about that.
Well, yeah,
so
but I mean, I mentioned it earlier, just, you know, because
for our listeners,
we pre-show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For our listeners that are not familiar with Pride of the X-Men, explain.
It was a pilot that came out in 89, and back when Marvel was owned by New World Enterprises, you know, New World Pictures.
Hmm.
It was this 22-minute pilot, and it was supposed to be part of the Marvel Action Heroes block, I guess, which was syndicated in various markets, but not really around here. I remember seeing it on VHS. It was released on VHS, and a lot of it actually ended up being the animation ended up being incorporated into the X-Men console arcade game, which many of us played and threw ridiculous amounts of money into.
I threw so much goddamn money at that game.
Side-scrolling
yeah.
one?
Oh, yeah.
Side-scrolling one.
It's like you and like six of your friends.
Oh,
there was
X-Men, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Simpsons.
I was gonna say the exact same fucking thing. They were side by side, too. Like, you could just like, here's $100. just blow it all.
Well, and let's not forget pre-Man Titty Steven Tyler Revolution X, the shooter game.
Oh, God. Why would you bring that up?
Fuck.
Where you shot CD bombs at people. And,
I would just die.
So,
a lot of that animation
from that show ended up in that video game.
In Revolution X?
Not Revolution X.
Revolution X. I want to bring up Moonwalker. You ever play that?
Oh, yeah.
I owned Moonwalker, in which you throw the dust to kill people. I don't really know. And you save children, which now seems fucked up.
So yeah. The whole video game, you're Michael Jackson going through the streets looking for children. Like,
yes.
That's the plot of
the that's the plot of the game.
Really
yeah.
creepy now.
So fucking gross.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the Cosby game to come out.
So what, you just, like Sleeping Beauty?
You just
go
wear
up
a sweater
there
and just hand drink.
No, it's him tending bar at a holiday party is what it is.
Oh, God. Gotcha.
Yeah. Gotcha. Crazy. So anyways,
we're just gonna shit on all the icons of the 80s.
Yeah. So it's this thing is the
hey, remember when Eddie Murphy picked up a tranny?
Then we got to daycare years later.
Yeah, but there was a kid running around in a Flash costume in most of that movie, so that was awesome.
Badass. Yeah. He thought he was
Flash.
I knew
Flash. The DC guy would bring that up. Like, the movie might suck, but there's a kid in a Flash costume, all right?
The movie still sucked, big old dick.
Wait. I mean, you know, hey, I didn't pay to watch it. Anyway,
Sloth is wearing a Superman shirt, and that's not why the movie's good. It's still cool he's doing it, but it's good on its own, too.
Hey, you guys!
There you go. Shave your head for Halloween, like a little twirl right there in the center.
Just give yourself a little Forrest Whitaker eye. You'll look just like Sloth.
Forrest Whitaker eye.
Are we sure Kron's not here?
I'm sorry, you've only been speaking for 20 minutes. So, like.
All right, so it was kind of like it was supposed to be a pilot for a series that didn't happen, and it had Kitty Pryde in it, and Kitty Pryde, Storm, Nightcrawler, Cyclops Wolverine who spoke with a Canadian-Australian accent, which is just really weird.
More weird Australian than Canadian.
Professor X and Dazzler, which was really, which is kind of out of from left field that she was ever considered, brought into the X-Men fold anyways.
The rock star turned mutant person?
Well, yeah.
Disco star turned.
Dazzler.
You have to add that a little bit. X-Men did have a few that were era-eccentric.
Well, Dazzler started off as, this rollerblading disco hero from 1978. And then they brought her in, and then they were like, oh, wait a minute, she's a mutant. And I think we need to get into the whole thing about mutants.
Well, I think we need to pick out some of the weirder mutant powers. But first off, I want to just state that Pride of the X-Men apparently worked with time travel and foreshadowed the fact that an Australian would be playing a Canadian Wolverine.
There you go. I didn't even think about that. Wolverine.
Wolverine.
But
that's true.
I mean, back in the day, Lee and Kirby kind of got lazy.
So wait, was there a Pride of the X-Men episode where they did Les Miserables too? Or
No. That was just, it was just a one-off.
And stuff.
Yeah. It was just a one-off. But I mean, they were known as mutants because honestly, Lee and Kirby just kind of got lazy and couldn't think of more accidents to create superheroes. And like, well, hey, what if they were just born that way? How would that work? So that's kind of what they, that's kind of how they came up with the idea for mutants is they got lazy. And it's funny because they did all these things and X-Men has become so much more than what they intended.
Sure.
I mean, it was become an allegory for the civil rights.
That's where it worked is that right during the civil rights time. Yeah. So these people were born. They didn't decide. They're not Iron Man. They're not Spider-Man. Yeah. They literally are born and have to deal with it. And all they receive is hatred. And like, you know, the way Professor X is recruiting them, literally he has to save, you know, Scott Summers from a mob that's going to kill him. Like, it's like that point of not like, yeah, you're a little different and weird. The people hated the mutants.
They were going to burn an entire church to get the Nightcrawler.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's the thing. It was a statement. They might have been, I guess, kind of quote unquote lazy, but in the same instance, they used that to pretty much kind of communicate what was going on during that era with the civil rights movement. So. Yeah.
Well, and that's why the X-Men to this day is seen as an allegory for anybody that's been kind of left of center of common culture, whether it be, you know, a minority that's not properly represented in society or LGBT community can kind of identify a little bit with the X-Men for their feelings of not being, you know, part of.
Yeah. So me on this episode.
Yes, Steven, we're all staring at you because you're not.
I was a mixed kid in the 80s, folks. Mixed kid in the 80s, just saying.
Because you're not a straight white guy.
I'm not a straight Anglo-Saxon motherfucker. My dick's actually big.
Jungle Fever was about his parents.
Need to know that.
I'm just saying. You Aryan motherfuckers, I don't know. Well, you're English and
I'm Scandinavian in English, so I'm just super white.
Yeah.
Like, my English side is like, not white enough. Oh, Scandinavian, cool, translucent. That's the way to go.
What is...
He's like Larry Bird. He's clear.
Irish.
Yeah, pretty much.
Irish?
That's right.
Yeah, I'm Irish.
You don't like whiskey. Okay. I don't understand.
Is that a requirement? Am I...
I mean, kind of. My last is MacGyver, motherfucker, and I love whiskey, so...
I don't get it all the time, but I don't mind whiskey. I just...
Yeah, just...
I'm sorry, my Irish
cream. My white side is... Literally like 50% Irish, so I'm like poor Irish basically. Yeah.
I'm so, Irish and you're a mutt, so English, German, and French on my dad's side. So
I'm half Swedish.
English, German, and French.
Yeah.
So your pussy side is the French, right?
Don't think it's that much French, but I mean, it's just there is some French there, but it's mostly Irish. So my mom's side of the family is 100% Irish.
Yeah, it's my mom's side is 100% Swedish, and then my dad's side, I think I'm Irish, British, Dutch, and German. I think is mine.
So there's Irish all around here as we're drinking.
That's why
we can do this and still be coherent, somewhat
coherent.
It's funny, like my grandmother's side was Scotch Irish. My grandfather was Norwegian Dutch Irish.
Nice.
So we have that in common.
Oh yeah.
Like the really, really white. That's why I'm really light.
Yeah.
like I've always said my white side is very white.
The thing with it. Yeah, so I guess that's why, you know, everybody identifies with the X-Men because you know what it's like to be considered an outsider. I mean, definitely growing up, I was considered an outsider. I didn't blow the shit out of little animals. I didn't fish. I wasn't really good at sports, but I was really good at reading.
And you were Mechanicsville, right?
Yeah.
So you weren't super racist and
no, I wasn't. No, everybody else was. Nerd.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I was saying Mechanicsville.
But you know,
fucking...
it was one of those things where it's like, and then
they're like, Sean Lucas, you piece of shit, come beat up this minority kid with us, and you're like, no, I'm gonna go read comics.
No, that would kind of really never happen. Yeah. But anyways, they had I was the one that got bullied more than anything else, but or anybody else for that matter. But anyways. You kind of understood, especially if you got picked on and you got bullied, you understood what these people were going through, and that's kind of what made it cool. And the other thing that was really cool about the X-Men is once they did the giant size and once, you know, X-Men 74 came through, they made the team international. So it just wasn't white dudes or white girls. It was everybody. You had Storm, who was from Africa. You had Banshee, who was Irish. Colossus was Russian. Nightcrawler was German. Wolverine was Canadian, even though he might have sounded Australian on a cartoon.
I was just gonna say, like, that's the thing is, I enjoy the initial run of X-Men, but it's that Claremont giant size that, like you were just saying, like, established. You had just Colossus and all these new characters. And from there, I mean, Claremont just made this amazing run.
Well, see, that's probably when it really rejuvenated, because I've had the opportunity to read some of the old X-Men comics. And, I mean, it's for the time, all comics kind of had that same, like, explaining everything they're doing in every scene kind of way of writing about things. And just that was just how comics were written back then.
And the series stalled midway, like, in, like number 60s or something. Yeah, some fights. From somewhere in the mid 60s on up to 74, it was all, well, it was all reprints. Actually, it was probably before that, somewhere probably in the late 40s, early 50s on the numbering.
Yeah, it was a little in the 50s that, and X-Men just wasn't selling. Marvel didn't want to get rid of it, so what they just started doing is reprinting the issues. So issue like 53 was a reprint of issue 1, and they went through. They're just about to just get rid of it, and they pretty much went to Claremont like, can you do anything with this? And they didn't care what he did. He did Giant Size X-Men, and they decided, all right, we'll run with that, and now we have the X-Men dead. But there was a time where X-Men almost got canceled.
Well, they did the same thing like with licensing out to Fox, basically. It's like X-Men weren't doing all that well like towards the end of the 90s probably with sales, because the market had flooded, just comics in general weren't selling like they used to. So like
95, the whole thing almost bottomed out.
Yeah, and like, so 2000 is when the X-Men movie dropped out. You know, there's at least 5 years of development on the deal over to Fox for licensing and everything from Marvel. So they were like, basically, we'll do what we did, and instead of just doing reprints because it's not selling and we don't want to get rid of the character, we'll just license this out to Fox and be like, here, can you do anything with this?
They had no idea, because, again, comic movies weren't really that doing that well. So when that X-Men movie first came out, they were expecting to do fanboy business, and that was it. And it blowing up started everything.
But
yeah. So.
Had Blade not done as well as it had,
no,
X-Men would have never happened.
Blade started, but the X-Men movie didn't open well. It record-breaking weekend and started everything going.
I was going to agree with Hunter. Blade was the first comic book essential movie from that late 90s that started
successful,
that trend.
Successful Marvel
movie. But in 2000, when X-Men came out, like, that just fucking... And then when X2 came out, come on, dude.
And when did Spider-Man come out? That was like, was that 01 or 02?
Spider-Man was 01, yeah.
Yeah, Spider-Man came out the year after.
Spider-Man was 02.
Was it 02?
Yeah.
I know this because...
Okay. That's right.
9/11 happened.
And the Two Towers out.
We had to take down.
Oh, right.
The first promos for Spider-Man had not only the trailer, but the posters had, and the reflection on his eyes, the Twin Towers. Everything Spider-Man promotion had to come down, and then, so I know it's 2002, because I had to take all that shit down.
Yeah.
And the next two came out in 2003?
Next
two was 2003, right? Yeah. But no, X-Men, the X-Men movie just, and it was good. I remember going to see it, and I loved it. Like, for what they did with it.
I don't think Fox knew exactly what they had. I think they probably got a pretty decent deal, but, you know, the comics were selling strong. But, again, at this point, nobody knew exactly how well comic to movie would do.
Yeah. So. And now we're seeing something in comic books, and X-Men is part of this. And now with Captain America as well, I think we're starting to see this as well, that the popularity of the movies are actually affecting the way the direction that they're taking it with the comic books. Like, the movies for X-Men is so popular, but not in Marvel's pocket, that they're kind of like backlog in X-Men a little bit in the comics. They're not really pushing it as hard as they used to.
They're not at all. Yeah. Actually.
Yeah. So they're kind of basically trying to like tank it a little so that there's not new content coming out to develop movies. So eventually maybe they might be able to get it under their wing.
Best example is Fantastic Four. Marvel just dropped Fantastic Four. They're like, good luck, Fox.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Well, it didn't help that most recent movie was hot garbage.
Yes.
I mean, so were the other two.
Be nice.
So were the other two.
Yeah.
I mean, like, none of the Fantastic Four movies have been worth a goddamn.
No.
They've all been shit.
Actually, I was talking to my friend the other day, and you know who would be the perfect person? If they attempt to do Fantastic Four again.
Oh, they are. I mean, Marvel's, like,
he's already done a good Fantastic Four movie. It just goes under another title, which is The Incredibles. Give Brad Bird a chance to do a live-action Fantastic Four movie. Nice. He'll knock that shit out of the park.
I would agree.
He will give that team the respect that it needs.
Yeah.
So, he's already, I mean, if you watch Incredibles...
Yeah.
It's basically a Fantastic Four movie.
I think they should give that guy that did Chronicle a chance to do Fantastic. Oh, wait. No. That.
What's sad about that is listening to the Kevin Smith podcast before
oh my God,
before Carter, before the movie comes out, where he is talking up the movie and he loves Fox. And then the movie comes out and then everything comes out about how Fox fucked him over. But like listening to listen to that. He is just kissing Fox's ass.
Oh, sure.
Then the movie came out.
Yeah.
Which I still haven't made it through. I tried.
I haven't watched. I've read where people have
minutes,
watched it.
And they're still not the Fantastic Four. That's all I have to say.
What?
Yeah. If you are really curious about Reed Richards working on scientific shit, that's your movie.
If you want to see the Fantastic Four,
wait 45 minutes at least.
No.
Oh, fun. No.
Yeah.
I'm not, I have zero interest to watch that movie. Like, I don't, no. No, I don't care.
Now, as far as X-Men, one of the exciting part of them lazily falling across a really good idea that you're just born with it is that there's a big cast of characters. I mean, almost everybody, if you're an X-Men fan or not, knows of the big ones. You've got Wolverine and Storm and Cyclops.
Jax.
Professor X, of course, and even the mutant villains, and Magneto, and Apocalypse, and people are starting to know a little bit more about the Hellfire Club and the White Queen and all that. But
they're going to do a new Mutants movie.
They did an interesting thing with White Queen, where you know she was with the Hellfire Club, and then Grant Morrison's run, they pretty much had her join the X-Men, and but add the ability to turn into diamonds. Mm-hmm. That wasn't original. That was straight up Grant Morrison said, give her a second mutation.
Was that around the time that Kitty started being in charge of the mansion as well?
No. What you're thinking of right now is Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah.
This is the new X-Men run
that Grant Morrison did.
Yeah, this was 395, and that's actually where I left off. My Uncanny run goes from 171 to 395. It's 18 years. Jeez. It's 1983 to 2001, it's damn impressive. And it was a real no. And most of it,
over there.
Yeah, right.
Maybe, but I mean, you know, when you have a collection of one series that goes more than one long box, which that does, that's pretty good.
That is pretty fucking good. I gotta give him that.
Yeah,
listen, Sean Lucas. We know you. All you want to hear is yes, Sean Lucas. It's a good size.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay. Whatever.
How many long boxes you got?
Yeah. You don't even want to know.
Fill up the closet, good.
Yeah. Dude, it's.
Could you fill up this room? Could you fill up the podcast room?
Oh yeah, easily.
God damn.
I got 15 at my. I got 15 at my folks' place. I've got at least 15 at mine, and probably. Could if I took them all off the couch, I could probably fill another box or two.
All right, what's your address?
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know, just to stop by.
That piece of shit lives at.
No, but I mean, that's just like one of those. I've always said that I'm not a comics collector. I'm a comics accumulator. Collector involves intent. I never intended to amass a collection. It just kind of happened because I bought them every week or every other week.
You bought them every other week, and you never got rid of them.
That's actually interesting because you were talking earlier about 95, how the market just kind of crashed. And half of that was because people stopped being readers and just collectors. So you had all the bullshit covers and all this stuff. And they weren't concerned about the writing. So after a crash, you had Morrison doing X-Men. You had Josh Whedon doing X-Men. You had all these really actually good writers going on these books, and that's what was kind of the resurgence in the comic industry.
Astonishing X-Men was actually the
was
first
X-Men. Astonishing.
Well, that, but it was also the first X book that I had read in years that Pat Godfrey from Velocity Comics was like, dude, you might want to pick this up.
It's fucking
He's
bad.
Like, yeah. He's like, I know you're a little disenfranchised with the X-Men, but Josh Whedon's writing this. You really might want to pick it up. I think you'd be surprised what'll do with that. And it's a cast you know, and it was a really good cast of X-Men too.
That was actually the first exposure I had to Josh Whedon was that book. I know that's weird. No, didn't watch any Buffy. Didn't watch any Firefly.
Get out.
Same
book.
Here.
Yeah, hold on. Get out. It was literally, I'm going to pick up this book, and I was so impressed. That's when I went to Firefly. That's when I started just pretty much picking up everything he did because of that Astonishing X-Men issue. So
that was a great run. Absolutely.
And he was established at that point. That's the thing, yeah. And
yeah,
that
he was just like, hey, I want to write X-Men. And they're like, okay.
The best, you best can do X-Men that. Runs is you have the right writer and you have the best artist. And with that one, I think it was Cassidy. Cassidy, and his work's phenomenal.
Absolutely. And it was popular enough that they even years later came out with a motion comic version, which that actually costs a fair amount of money to do a motion comic.
Like, yeah, I've watched it on Netflix. Yeah. It's really good.
It's actually really good.
I actually own it.
I think I binge watched it. I think
I did the same thing. Yeah,
because the episodes were like 15 or 20 minutes. So it was like, all right, I got an hour and a half. I'll just binge watch six of these.
Yeah. It was solid. But Whedon did, how many years did he do for X-Men? He did
about
a
three. It was about three years. Yeah.
Okay.
So
it ended with what? Ghost Box, I think, was his last?
No, right before Ghost Box.
Ghost Box.
So he has the one with Kitty Pryde pretty much taking control of the giant ship. That she phases.
Right,
basically wrote Kitty Pryde out of X-Men continuity for about 3 years.
Okay.
Honestly, I wasn't really happy about that at all because I've always had it. That was like my first comic book crush was Kitty Pryde. I'll totally go on record and admit that. Why not?
So were you a big Excalibur fan?
Yes. All right. Totally was.
I have to ask because.
Also, you know that Kitty Pryde is gay, right? Well, the person that plays Kitty Pryde.
But I mean that's the actress. We're talking about the character here,
and you know that's not a real person. So the only physical human being that has embodied Kitty Pryde.
Okay, so you're gonna cast shade on me for having a crush on a comic book character, which I'm sure, Mike Bigot, you've done much much worse, but you're not willing to admit it.
My appreciation for Squirrel Girl is strictly platonic.
How do we get back to Squirrel Girl? No,
always
stop.
Going to bring
this
up Squirrel
is about
Girl, man.
X-Men. There is no goddamn Squirrel Girl.
It's always going to bring up fucking
dude,
Squirrel Girl.
She
man.
Dated fucking Wolverine.
Oh,
there's your tie-in.
It. Oh, stop.
You
it.
Know when?
Fuck off.
When you're 12 or 13, and you read about this character, and you're just like, it's like kind of crush on you. Everybody has a crush on a literary character. Mine just happened to be one that was drawn and not just solely in a book. It's fine. It's no big deal. Stop looking at me like I'm weird. You of all people thinking me is weird because I had a crush on Kitty Pryde. That ain't throwing shade. I don't know what is. The fact that you're talking to me in a fucking lampshade is ironic as hell right now.
Hey, it makes my level sound better.
Yeah,
so
I know it does. But and I totally did get Excalibur also because I was reading Captain Marvel or Captain Britain. Yeah, the British Captain Marvel's Jesus.
Which that's an interesting run just because they just pull Kitty Pryde, Nightcrawler, and then you just pair them up and it was like the British X-Men. Almost,
So. And it was Captain Britain, and I read Captain Britain Monthly, which was drawn by Alan Davis and Alan Moore.
The way it worked, Captain Britain was the brother of Psylocke.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is back.
It all interconnected.
Okay. So Psylocke is really weird because she's a British character that's kind of Asian because she body swapped with a assassin named Revanche. During the Siege Perilous, and then Revanche ended up contracting the Legacy virus and died, so they couldn't actually. Because Revanche was trapped in Betsy Braddock's actual British body. And she contracted the Legacy virus and died, so then they couldn't switch her back.
And that's how you get Olivia Munn.
Yes, pretty that's much, yeah, pretty much say, how you get Olivia
it's
Munn.
Almost like
to...
the writers were like, or Marvel's like, you know, we want to keep Psylocke on the team, but is there any way she can be Asian and hotter? And that's how they did it. Just mind swap and kill off the old one. So.
We've been looking at test audiences, and they want a hot Asian.
Yeah, pretty like, much. Yeah. Pretty much. Well, and what's funny is I'm pretty sure that's when Jim Lee had just started on X-Men, and they were like, all right, Jim, you make some pretty fantastic-looking females. We want you to make a hotter version of Psylocke. And there's where you get the brain swap and Asian martial arts expert Psylocke. So
he's like, do you mind if it's just kind of a weird, watered down plot line? No.
No, yeah.
Does
no.
she turn out Asian?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
that's
fine.
The thing is,
it's fine.
It's hard to read that those issues, but at the end of it, you've got a sword wielding Psylocke. So there you go.
But yeah, we're going to take our mid-episode break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about some of our favorite characters from X-Men, our favorite mutants, that kind of thing. Because it's such a big cast of characters. We got to get a little bit individual on this. I mean, a lot of people know, you know, Wolverine because he got kind of just shoved in our faces with the movies and everything.
We didn't
like
have
that.
A choice.
Yeah,
he was there.
It was forced upon us. but there are so many other characters that deserve a little bit of a moment as well. Like,
there are a lot of characters.
A lot,
solid,
yeah, yeah.
Solid. Like,
just not Cyclops. But we'll get into that.
I mean, he had his points.
Bad Cyclops in the all-new X-Men run, I really dig, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we'll get into that after the break, so we'll be right back.
We are halfway through another episode of Geeks Under the Influence, and before we continue, let's go through our sponsors and friends of the show. First up, I want to give a shout-out to RVA Magazine. They've been nice enough to post a lot of info about local podcasts, including this one that you can find at rvamagazine.com. Click on the podcast link, and you will see a number of episodes of podcasts from podcasters in the Richmond areas. They're doing a lot of support for that community, and definitely want to support them for doing it. So check them out at rvamag.com. Next up is LornaDigital.com. Lorna was nice enough to build a beautiful website for Geeks Under the Influence that you can find at GUIPodcast.com. Check that out, and also check out all of her other work at LornaDigital.com. If you tell her that you heard about her web and graphic design work at Geeks Under the Influence, she will give you the friends and family discount. Next up is Burn in Hell Candles. You've seen the votive candles of Mary and Joseph, but have you seen St. Lemmy or St. Prince? They do a number of different really fun, funky votive candles, and they also do custom work, so check them out at burninhellcandles.com. Next up are friends of the show. These are other video podcasts mainly that are friends of ours that have been on or will be on our show or will be on theirs, just kind of building up the community of podcasters. First up is River City Shit Show. Our buddy Kron, the offensive one, has his own video podcast that you can find on YouTube at River City Shit Show, where they skewer the news, kind of a roast of popular culture. It's wildly offensive, so if that's something that you're into, this is definitely the video podcast for you. Next up is Black Leather Couch. Our friend Carlton was nice enough to invite the Geeks Under the Influence to come on his video interview podcast, where we sit down, talk about the podcast, the inception, to kind of the ins and out of every episode, our intentions for the future. It's a lot of fun, and he also has interviews with porn stars, rock stars, just interesting people around town. Well worth a watch by looking up Black Leather Couch on YouTube. Finally, we've got Instant Replay Live. Our buddies at Instant Replay Live do a video game Let's Play, where they play video games, talk smack on each other, talk about the video game, and generally just have a good time. 10 to 20 minutes, perfect for your lunch break, so check them out also on YouTube at Instant Replay Live. As far as sponsors go, our biggest sponsors are you. You can go to the homepage at GUIPodcast.com and click on the Amazon affiliate link. By ordering anything through Amazon through that link, we get a little percentage of anything that you buy, so it's a way to support this podcast without spending any additional money. Another way to do it more directly is we have a Patreon page. You can be a patron, a monthly patron, by going to patreon.com/GUIPodcast and become anywhere from $5 to $50 a month sponsor of this podcast. The sponsorship tiers involve voicemails, video thank yous, mentions on the show, koozies, all sorts of different stuff, being berated by Crump or thanked immensely by me. So there's all sorts of options for you that you can check out at patreon.com/GUIPodcast. And finally, GUI has a new home for trivia, actually two. We are doing trivia now, bi-monthly trivia at both Fallout and Wonderland, both located in Chaco Bottom in Richmond, Virginia. The first and third Monday of every month, we have trivia at Fallout from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock. That's going to be a lot more horror-centric trivia that goes on just before and after some horror movies, some or horror movies and schlock, just, you know, campy fun. So it's a great time for a Monday night. And so every second and fourth Tuesday, we'll be doing just crazy trivia, the kind of trivia that you would expect to be played at Wonderland. So check us out from 8 to 10 every second and fourth Tuesday at Wonderland. And now back to the episode.
We are back for episode 51 of Geeks Under the Influence, our X-Men comics and animated shows episode. And before we do anything else, we're going to do what we always do on the second half of Geeks Under the Influence, talk about what we're under the influence of, what we're drinking. So first off, we have the last bottle of booze that was given to us by Blue Mountain during Lowdown Brown's Bachelor Weekend. Yeah.
It's the last thing.
Bye-bye. This is the Blue Mountain Blue Reserve. It's a Hommelbier, a Belgo-American ale.
So a Belgian-style American ale, I'm assuming.
Kind of Belgian-style, yeah. Yeah,
it's tasty. We've had it on the show before. It's tasty. I brought it before. It
does have a little bit more hop than you would have with even an American-Belgian or a Belgian-style American ale, but it's not overpowering.
We've talked about Blue Mountain and their hop affinity.
Yeah, they do enjoy the hops, yes.
Did you make up a word?
Just saying. They've come over that. They actually want to do the hops.
Yeah.
The brewmaster's like, no, like they have that. What's that one they were making that was just all the hops? It wasn't the one they gave us Reb Zeppelin. It wasn't Hopwork Orange. There was one another one they were working on that
was
finished.
It was a
double IPA.
Double IPA, like. Yeah.
It was just all the hops in your face.
Oh, my God.
Tons of hops.
Can't do it. Yeah.
Nope. So that's our specialty beer that we're drinking on for this episode is the last bastion of... beer that was procured when Lowdown was still a free man.
No, as a married man, that needs to be at least a yearly thing. I would like for it to be semi-annually so that way we can go in spring and fall. Because we've always gone when it's warm or in the spring. We've never been up there in the fall.
We can, as a group, just the dudes go for your wedding anniversary to the mountains and enjoy your wedding anniversary away from your wife.
Yeah, that'll go over well.
I don't
well.
Think she's going to approve that.
Nope.
he doesn't even have a comeback. He's like speechless at the thought.
I just kind of want to punch you for being so stupid right now. That's kind of what's going to
be mad. More fun. Wouldn't it be more fun to let Rachel punch him?
That would be.
I would not want to. She's
she
a tiny.
She plays derby. She might hit harder than me.
Yeah,
actually.
She's a tiny woman, but she could very likely take me in a
if
fight.
If you actually came to a derby match, you'd see her throw bitches 4 feet across the ring when she bops them.
Yeah, because she's a awesome. Beast.
I love my wife.
So aside from that, I am, of course, going on the cheap with the High Life. So that's what I'm drinking on.
I don't think you're going on the cheap. I think you're living your best life because you're living the High Life.
I'm living the High Life, yeah.
There's no VIP.
All right. Anyway, Hunter, what are you drinking on?
Pretty much just scrounged in the fridge, pulled out some PBR, and then you were nice enough to share some of the what y'all brought back from the mountains. So mainly PBR and a little bit of that. So
okay. Fair enough. Mr. Sean Lucas?
Well, I started Sunday off like I do every Sunday. A couple of mimosas at Bandito's, and then I've been doing the PBR.
Fair enough.
Ever since.
That's Sunday fun day.
Yeah.
That's the tradition. Yeah. And Mr. Lowdown.
I am currently drinking on the Blue Reserve. That's the... Bye-bye. but...
Can you say that to every one you finish?
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Before that, when I first got here, I actually brought... Hobbit one to try. It's Session Lager,
mm-hmm.
which is actually relatively hard to find. Our local brew shop, Once Upon a Vine, gets it occasionally. And I happen to find it at another store, Fresh Market, and I'm like, holy shit, okay. Bought a 12-pack of it. And since then, I've been drinking a amber ale by Full Sail. They're out of Oregon. And I mean, they're a little they're tasty. It's a little hoppy for an amber ale. I'm used to a little more malty on the end of an amber ale.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one's kind of got a little bite to it, but it's overall it's solid. Might not buy it again though.
Okay,
I won't buy it again.
You're gonna drink what you got, but you're not.
I'm gonna drink what I got and I hate it, but not spend the money on it again.
There's plenty of other beers you know you'll like that.
Yeah,
yeah. Fair enough.
Tons of other beers.
Yeah, understood.
Like over this.
So yeah, that's what we're drinking on this Memorial Day weekend. As we talk about one of the most iconic American symbols in comic books, which is the X-Men, even though they're international.
America.
Yeah, even though like one of the most popular ones is Canadian.
Yeah.
But, you know. Yeah. So before we left for the break, we were going to talk about some of our favorite mutants in the X-Men. Wolverine, I don't think we really need to tread too much into. People know Wolverine well enough to know, like, I mean, there's the insights that, you know, his first appearance was in Incredible Hulk, you know, but, like, aside from that, people know the character, they know the backstory, they know a lot about him. If you don't, it's very easily accessible on so many other markets, but, like, some of the other characters, like,
he was like an overnight success that took 20 years to make.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, no, like, because I was a huge Wolverine fan in the early 80s, and people were like, who the hell is this guy? And I'm like, oh, he's in the X-Men. Like, they didn't read the X-Men. Like, people didn't. Like, I had friends who would read comic books. They read Spider-Man and Captain America. They read the Avengers. They wouldn't touch the X-Men. The X-Men are just weird. And I'm like, no, they're not. They're not weird. You're weird. You like them. And I'm like, but no, they know that your math's off. It doesn't really work like that. But no. Yeah, it was one of those things. Wolverine took 20 years to get huge.
But the same thing happened with Deadpool, which is now like what Wolverine did years ago. Oh, Deadpool is doing now, where even before the movie took off. You were already starting to get that way, you know, especially when you get somebody like Brian Posehn writing the books and stuff. I mean, that makes a difference.
Oh, I knew when, like, I had to run into Walmart, like, a year before the movie came out, and everywhere was Deadpool shirts. And I went, okay, he's made it. Yeah.
But he's been out for, I mean,
20 years.
He's been out long enough to where, like, why isn't he? Deadpool's awesome. Like, it's not. Yeah. Coming from the fandom aspect, like, I get we know about him, but why wasn't he already out there? You know, they did a really shitty rendition of him.
They tried to kill it. Fox tried to kill the character.
Oh, my God.
Wolverine Origins. Again, the swords in the arm. How did he bend his arms? Yeah, I don't know.
Again, we can save this for next week.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Another one that actually fits better with the representation of Deadpool, who is a mutant, so it fits. And was X-Force and all that. So has been involved in and out with the X-Men for, you know, years. Was the animated movie Wolverine versus Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great run. And they did, you know, a Deadpool, a much more cartoony version, which is weird to say about Deadpool. But a cartoony version of Deadpool that was great. I think it really embodied the character. He was goofing off, pissing off his teammates, you know, the whole time. And just like, yeah, cracking jokes left and right. It was great. It was a lot of fun to watch that, primarily because of Deadpool. It also helped, you know, Hulk wrecking shit. That's always fun to watch too. But that was that double movie where it was that and Hulk versus Thor was the other movie that came with it.
Yeah, I remember
that. Be honest, I think I just watched the first one.
Hulk versus Thor was not bad, but it wasn't as good as Wolverine.
See, the only Hulk versus Thor I've seen is the actual live action one with Lou Ferrigno, where it's the Return of the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, God, that was so bad.
It was so bad.
It was so bad.
Odin!
But you have to understand,
so terrible.
When those came on, by the way, that was your only way to see besides Hulk, Marvel characters. So you had the Daredevil,
with the black, which they did well in the show, but
Rex,
the movie it was terrible.
Was it? Who was the guy who did that? His name was Rex. He was a pop star or a soap star from the 80s, and it was so bad.
That's the guy who played Matt Murdock?
Yeah. You know, the thing is, it's like you watched it because you knew that, it was on, and if it's going to be on, you watch it, but you like, it was like... It was bad. It was like, why? And like, I know this is bad, but I'm going to watch it because it's the only comic book thing on mainstream television.
See, for me, I was just young enough to know better because you guys are getting old. Yeah. So there's that.
Well, he's older than me. Before we dig too deep into the characters, there's another like early 90s series that we talked about earlier that they did a pilot of. Generation X was such complete trash. I mean, talk about
it. I never saw it, actually.
I found a copy on the internet a couple years ago and rewatched it for the first time since I was a kid, and it's such a dumpster fire.
Yeah, I heard it's dog
shit. If I was watching it with like three friends and we were drinking and just unloading on it like Mystery Science Theater style, it would have been a lot more fun. But watching it by myself sober,
it was just sad. Like,
you need somebody there to rag on it with you, right? You need somebody there.
This isn't even like Hell Comes to Frogtown good bad. Like this is just like.
Just watch that, by the way.
Oh, it's so good.
I love that fucking movie.
So good.
It came out the same year as the Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. movie with
the Hoff.
David Hasselhoff and Lisa Rinna as Countess Valentino D'Allegra de Fontaine. Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah, and I remember, like, I had to work. I was working at Applebee's, and I had to work. It came on a Tuesday night, and I missed it because I had to work that night, and it never came on again. And I forget which characters were in there. I think Jubilee was in there.
I make fireworks.
I don't want to get off the rails too much, but if we're talking about shitty Marvel stuff from the 90s, or I guess this was late 80s, but there was a Captain America movie that came out.
Oh,
in the 70s with Red Brown?
No.
The one with him on the bike? 80s. The bike where he puts a shield in the front of the bike.
No, no, no. Oh, you're talking about
J.D. Salinger's son.
Yeah, Matt Salinger.
Played Captain America. And they were so lazy that they had plastic ears. They didn't actually have his ears come out of it. They were plastic ears. So they had no close-ups of him because they had fucking plastic ears. So I know we're going way off the rails.
We've actually discussed this.
It's a shit
We've mess. Talked about this movie on another episode I was on. Yeah, because they made the Red Skull Italian.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we did. We did. Yeah, we did talk about
it. What's the one where he had a bike?
Oh, that was the one from the 70s. With Red Brown. Those were the made-for-TV movies after when CBS had the contract to do like Marvel films and Marvel TV series, because they did the Doctor Strange one, and then they did the Amazing Spider-Man show. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff was – yeah, that was rough. The Captain
ones that
America,
have been mostly forgotten by time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, it's in my brain. I still see it.
And the thing is, like, terrible. X-Men before 2000, there was a lot of talk about doing a live-action version for years and years, and they never did anything with it. And to be fair – watching like the first X-Men movie this far down, I'm glad they didn't try to do like a 93 X-Men movie, because it would have been complete trash.
Yeah.
Anything that it's kind of good that they did what they did when they did it, because anything before that would have been awful. Again, if they had gone and done a series off of Pride of the X-Men and from 89, it would have been awful.
Yeah.
But the animated series from 92 was really good.
Yeah.
It was really good. And it kind of went from there. And, and I think they fleshed out the characters really well. You got to know those characters, even if you weren't like a comic book fan. They made them, you know, you got to understood where everybody came from and why they are who they were. And that was one of the things, you know, that's actually one of the things about X-Men, is that the characters were always really fleshed out. You got to mm-hmm. know the motivations, and you were able to get a sense of who they were, and there was reason why your favorites were your favorites.
And that's what we're going to get into now, is really some of our favorite characters besides, say, the big names, mm-hmm. you know, Wolverine and Magneto and Professor X and all that. And both versions of Professor X, because there's been multiple times where he could walk and multiple times that he got crippled from different ways. But
yeah.
over the years.
Depending on the week. Yeah.
Like that poor unlucky bastard, because
right?
He's like, yeah, I'm crippled. And it's like, oh, nanobots, I'm cool. And then it's like, no, something else. Now I'm crippled again. Oh, now I can walk again. Nope, crippled again. It's the same thing that happens. Like, he gets crippled the same way every time.
Oh,
like,
I remember.
Oh, that sucks for you. You have just the worst luck with your spine.
He literally gets everything fixed, and then he gets attacked by some angry teenagers that throw a brick, and then he's crippled again. And it's like, they just keep messing with you. Like, okay, he's healed and he's going to be good. No, never mind. He's back in
like,
the wheelchair.
His back has to sound like it's just a bag full of marbles at this point. Just like whenever he like stops too quick in his wheelchair, you just hear like just all the gravelly bones just like
ew.
Bouncing around in there. Yeah.
But
it was brought up just a minute ago. One of the characters that I never really got behind, and it's apparently in Age of Apocalypse, is Jubilee.
Mm.
Sparklers of the X-Men universe, that it's
so much a 90s character. I mean,
totally.
You know, she was a mall rat.
Yeah,
she literally lived in a mall.
Yeah.
She ran away and lived in a mall and hung out and like lived in the air ducts and slept in the air ducts and shit. And
I think they brought her in because Kitty Pryde had left the team and they needed that. Honestly, that's the one thing that worked was with Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, kind of the Wolverine taking Kitty Pryde under his, you know, and to have Jubilee show up, that was the replacement Kitty Pryde was Jubilee. Not that her powers didn't suck, but still.
Oh, her powers were
like,
trash.
Like, I'm sorry, I'll take Kitty Pryde, Shadowcat's powers
are you
over some fireworks.
Are you saying that she was a short round to Wolverine's
pretty
indie?
Much, yeah. Yeah, the replacement short round. That's even worse.
There were some characters that just had some trash powers. Also, another character that's featured in Age of Apocalypse, and albeit is way cooler when he turns evil. Angel's an awful character.
Oh, yeah.
He flies.
Yeah.
So what do you do? And not even like flies like under his own power. He has giant get in the way of everything, big old wings to allow him to fly. So it's not like he can stop and hover unless he's just like flap, flap. And imagine trying to have a conversation where just right behind the dude you're talking to is just whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Hey, Angel, I was going whoosh, whoosh. Like, I can't, what? I can't hear you.
No, I will say that that's one of the coolest parts of Apocalypse was there's a scene with him that you get. Yeah, Hunter, I kind of geeked out at when it happened.
Now, I have to say that's something where they took a character in the comics and actually improved on, because actually, you know, just bringing it back up to Mutant Massacre, they bring the guy with the giant wings into the sewer system, which doesn't make a lot of sense, and he gets pretty much his wings get speared and they have to amputate his wings. So what happens? He goes to Apocalypse and becomes Archangel. Mm-hmm. And becomes a character that I didn't give a shit about to pretty much a badass motherfucker.
Well, yeah. Archangel was, but it was very much a 90s thing. But yeah.
You compare Angel awesome. With the wings yeah, that yeah, Hobbit was just talking about to a motherfucker can throw knives at you. I'll take yeah. that character.
And
right?
the way they went about that, because we're going to get this in the next episode, but the way they went about that in Apocalypse was kind of cheesy. Kind of cheesy.
I'm holding back.
Yeah, again, see?
Again, I was a really big, again, I mentioned I was a really big Kitty Pryde fan and always.
Oh, are you?
Always, yeah, totally.
Hey, Sean Lucas, are you are you Kitty Pryde fan?
Do you need
fan?
A moment in the restroom?
No, I don't need Kitty a moment Pryde. In the restroom. It's fine.
Is
but,
she your Jessica Rabbit?
We just give him a mic and then actually, what that. It'd be hilarious.
One of the things I loved about the Whedon astonishment. God damn it. See, like, everything I try and talk about. See,
thank you for listening to Geeks Under the Influences.
So we were talking the other day. It was like, yeah, it's like Mike said, yeah, we'll have you on. It'll be great. Karn won't be here. Nobody will talk over you. And then it's everybody's making fun of my sex life or lack thereof.
Sean Lucas, when you talk for 14 minutes straight, you're going to get interrupted.
Yeah, true. Just saying. I don't really get this. I don't really. A combo character. I don't know what the problem is.
No,
right?
I don't do that at all.
It's not weird.
Everything is weird.
We do give you long gaps of talking.
I would say swaths.
Yeah,
long
swaths.
Swaths.
Yeah.
So. One of my actually.
So what I was thinking was
set up the timer.
So one of the really cool things about the Joss Whedon run on Astonishing was that they established not only they established the relationship between Lockheed and Kitty Pryde, that like she actually gets to understand him for once. I mean, this is her pet dragon that's been around since 1983, and he's not really a dragon. He's actually an alien, but she actually gets to understand him for a little bit. And he's like, yeah, you know, I really like you. You're cool. And
see, I don't want to start any shit, but you've always hated
Lockheed the Dragon.
I always thought it was dumb. Like, I'm sorry, but like, she can phase through the shit. She's pretty badass, and then she's got this mini dragon. Just not my cup of tea.
I would say I didn't dislike Lockheed. I thought the character was fine. It seemed unnecessary. It was almost a distraction.
Yeah, out of place.
Yeah.
I mean, they brought. He was introduced. The connection with Secret Wars, like,
yeah. No. Even before that, no. It goes back to the days of the Brood. Yeah, I think it was in the about the 150s of Uncanny.
It's not even thematic. If they had like a female character called like Night Mage or something that like came from medieval times and got transported to the future with her pet baby dragon, I'm like, cool, no problem. That's
fine. No, it comes from the Brood storyline, like in 150s when they were in space for like 3 years or some shit.
Yeah, and I want to go ahead and open the forum up for you to do your thing. On the explain the Brood, because when I hear the Brood, I think of David Cronenberg. The Brood. Okay. Like, I don't think of...
That's a good thing to think of.
I'm just saying, but I don't think of, like, anything X-Men related.
They're not pretty much introducing, the Brood, like, an aliens race.
Yeah, the Brooder
like,
is an...
Xenomorphs almost.
Yeah.
But they're called
smarter.
The Broods.
Yeah,
Broods.
The Broods or Sleazoids, I believe, was the... like
Sleazoids?
Sleazoids.
Watch out for them Sleazoids.
Yeah, exactly. Nah, watch out for Sleazoids. Nah.
Sounds like a diss by a gangster. Watch out for the Sleazoids.
Wait. We're going to start a Creepazoids cover band where we do swing versions of Creepazoids songs.
I'm game.
Like
I'm game.
Lounge Sleazoids. Swing. Yeah. And call it the Sleazoids.
Can we please text that to Greg right now and see what he says about that?
Yeah. the Brood was a the Brood was this there were these really ugly aliens with wings.
Don't judge.
No, they really were. They were not. Yeah, and they were kind of, yeah, xenomorphs, kind of like a alien. You would get like you would get infected with the Brood.
So are you xeno shaming right now?
No, I'm not xeno shaming. Yeah.
You're xeno shaming. Mm-hmm.
But you would get infected with become a Brood host, and basically kind of like Alien, the thing would burst out of your chest. And
so what year did the Broods come out?
That was early 80s, 82, 83.
So right after 79, after Alien.
Yeah, after Alien.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just checking.
Yeah,
all right.
83.
Clear out borrowing
I'm done.
From pop culture.
Yeah. I'm done with it. It's cool.
Yeah, and it was like even Storm had turned. Storm almost became a Brood queen.
Not every X-Men story was the strongest, but
yeah.
I was gonna say like I'm done with this. This
you know,
good.
they had
X-Men battle Dracula. All right, we can acknowledge
they did
that
actually added. Have and actually Jubilee ended up as a vampire, but you know,
battle Dracula.
That's just comics in general. Like I was looking up shit just to throw it at Smash about Superman on a regular basis, and apparently there was a run where Superman teamed up with the quick chocolate milk rabbit. There's a series of comics.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, there was a character called Captain Carrot in the DC universe. Actually, it's a thing.
Did you say dial 1-800 collect?
No. And he kind of might look like the quick rabbit, except for he wears like a red and yellow costume with a big C that has a carrot in the middle of it.
Isn't there a piece of broccoli that's in part of the core as well, or something like that?
I don't know, but I do remember reading Captain Carrot and his Zoo Crew. It was an actual DC Comics title in the early.
Maybe 80s. It was Captain Carrot that became a Green Lantern.
Green Lantern. Yeah, I was going to say, right? At this point, I mean,
actually,
you look qualified to wear a ring. Here you go, Rabbit.
I can do 30 minutes on the Zoo Crew. I don't need to do it. But
guess what episode
I can
we're never going
to
do?
I know.
You literally read everything that has been both bad and good.
Just not DC, but everything. Marvel had a character called the Aquarian. Aquarian was basically Jesus in a long flowing shirt with these sleeves that went down to here. Yeah, it was kind of terrible. Came out of the Man Thing series.
That's amazing. That sounds like the prequel to Preacher.
Yeah.
The Aquarian.
They had a character Jesus called Omega down. The Unknown. Oh, like, is Marvel has definitely has some shitty characters. Brother Power the Geek, Prez, things like that. But, Marvel's got stuff in there, and they got skeletons in their closet, too.
Yeah. Talking about shitty characters, is there any specific X-Men that just, you know, irritate the fuck out of you? Or
well, I haven't even said the ones I like yet. So.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, in the cartoon, Morph bothered the shit out of me. He was such a whiny little bitch. Like, he was like, I'm evil now. Now I'm confused. I don't know what's going on. Mr. Sinister, tell me what to do. You know, like,
Morph was definitely a TV character.
Yeah.
Until Age of Apocalypse, when they actually made him an actual thing.
He was the Harley.
Oh, and then the
Exiles.
Yeah, and he was part of the Exiles, which was a book that I really dug in the 90s.
At least for me, I was going to say, is this character Longshot, which to me, his ability was he was lucky, and they kept trying to make him badass in the run, and it just never fucking happened. Like, his connection was Mojo for the Mojo world, but it was completely pointless. They just kept pushing. Eventually, they realized nobody gives a shit about Longshot, and he just disappeared one day.
And they tried to make, like, a badder-ass version of Longshot called Shatterstar, but he kind of sucked,
too.
Yeah,
they gave him a sword and made him look more like Cable, but it didn't fucking work.
Yeah.
I gotta say, some of my favorite X-Men characters, aside from the basic ones, I mean, I think everyone can say they're, like you said, they're a Professor X fan, or they're a Magneto fan for the villain, or they're a Wolverine fan. Really dug Gambit a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really, definitely. Really dug Gambit.
Although he had the worst costume in the 90s.
No shit, right? His costume
He really
was
did have the
not,
worst
not
costume
practical.
Ever.
No.
But I love his character. I love his attitude. He was, you know, he was almost on par with Logan as far as being a dick, but he was funnier with it. Whereas Wolverine was just angry all the time, you know. So that was fun.
Another character that I just really appreciated, kind of the pro and con of the power thing, was Rogue.
I was going to say, Rogue.
Yeah. Kind of connects with Gambit because exactly. of I was gonna, the romance they have.
Yeah. That's what I was going to go with. Yeah. Rogue is like another one that I'm like, no, she's an amazing character.
And it covered that a bit in the movies, but like, it did. I
too
think.
Too much to a point later
it,
on.
Yeah, in, yeah, in a little bit. But just the idea of that you're able to absorb everyone's powers or their, you know, personalities to a degree, like all sorts of stuff, but their life force. But what that means is that you can't actually have a connection, a mutual connection with somebody. It's always you're the dominant in that connection to the point where you're like
physical connection.
Yeah, physical connection. She can't bang nobody.
I'm saying, right?
She broke can't
life.
Fuck.
She'd literally be sucking the life juice out of their dick.
She wouldn't do that. Yeah, he went there. Yeah. Yep. He just sees Rogue.
Yeah. you're welcome.
So, wait, if she's sucking super sperm, does she absorb the dormant X genes of the semen? Jesus, that, so she gets like 10 billion X powers at the same time if she swallows a load? Is that?
Could you imagine the gratification from that?
Like, most powerful mutant of all time.
<You're right. laughs> I'm just waiting for the cease and desist order to come by.
I would love that episode of the 92 X-Men where she swallows Gambit's load and then she becomes like all seeing, like Doc Manhattan level, like powerful.
Like, you heard it here first, kids.
Oh my god.
Oh wow. Hunter, you were going to say something.
I was going to bring up a little bit about Rogue being a bad guy, but I think we're yeah. caught off guard with the Rogue concept.
Yeah, I think you and I had similar points to make there.
But another one that I really enjoy as far as X-Men go, and I love how they portrayed him in Deadpool, going back to Deadpool, was I've always been a fan of Colossus. He's big and lumbering, but he's got the heart and brain of just sensibility. Like he was like, no, this is wrong. If you still do this, then you're going to see the other side of me. What? Right now, this is the wrong thing to do. I'm telling you, don't do it. And if you keep doing it, I'm going to fucking wreck you. That was Colossus's thing.
One of the best moments in Whedon's run is Kitty Pryde's going through and she runs into Colossus. And at that point, he had died. He had sacrificed himself, injected himself with the legacy virus. Mm-hmm. So that's the first time you see Colossus again, and the way Whedon did it by having, of all people, Kitty Pryde, who they had a romance for a while, run into him, and she's just stunned. And that was a great way to bring
it. And it was a really sad thing to watch Colossus die, too, because he was gone from X-Men continuity for, 10 plus years.
Yeah.
Like, you just didn't – he was gone. He was like persona non grata. He was – like, he didn't exist. Nobody talked about Colossus for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then he shows up again, and it's like, you know, the last page revelation. It's like one of the things I love and I hate about the writer Brian K. Vaughan is that he is the king of the last page cliffhanger. And you had Whedon do the same fucking thing, and you go to the last page, and there she goes, runs into Colossus, and you're like, what is he? Is he back? No, I got to wait 30 days and figure out what the hell happened? No! Yeah.
But see, that proved to me just how strong Whedon was and how seriously he was taking the characters. Because instead of just the blatant, Colossus is back, you have, again, Kitty Pryde to find him. And that was just impactful on so many levels. And that's where Whedon's like, I know these characters.
Colossus was a real favorite. Nightcrawler was a real favorite. Because he was probably the most human of all of them, even though he looked like a demon.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. He was probably the most human. And the fact that he struggled with Catholic faith as to what he was doing, that just made it even more real.
One thing that Marvel's really been good about in general, but especially with the X-Men, is that there's always a balance between the positive and the negative with the powers that they have, where – like, even with somebody as Wolverine, who can't die and, you know, has the claws and the sense of smell and everything, and it all seems like majorly positive, his inability to die and it sets him apart from the way that the rest of humanity views the world.
Because he looks at, like, I'm going to be here way past this.
Yeah.
And as far as his, like...
his interpersonal relationships are basically nil because he doesn't feel like he can get close to anybody.
And one thing they brought up with Wolverine in the comic multiple times, but they actually did bring it up in the first X-Men movie, which this is a good tie-in of what they've kept continuity-wise, is when Rogue asks if it hurts, and he's like, every time. Could you imagine every time he does that, it fucking hurts? Like, So your whole life, you're like, that's your main instinct is to, like,
that's what makes them so.
What you do.
Pop your claws, cool.
And yeah. Then like so every time it fucking hurts.
Well, I think it also gets forgotten. Like people forget. Like it's not that he doesn't feel pain; it's that he can regenerate. So
he feels everything.
He goes through shit.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
But you look at the X-Men characters, and all of them have that thing where they even played with it with Xavier in First Class or in Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
Where if he uses his powers, then he's crippled, and if he's not crippled, then he can't use his powers. You know, with Quicksilver, he's so fast that normal things in life are just basically a boredom to him. He almost like leans towards criminality just as something to do because the world just moves too slow for him, and which would be maddening if you think about it.
It would be
that the world moving that slow in your perspective would be absolutely maddening. Rogue can't touch people. Storm has her issues as well with
claustrophobic.
And I mean, everybody's got their little balance and stuff, and that makes them multidimensional characters as opposed to like characters that are two-dimensional because they're too powerful. I can't think of one offhand. Superman that that's just
knew that was gonna happen.
It gets kind of boring because there's
the same
just,
shit. It yeah, all it's the same shit.
Gambit can't do anything. His family hates each other and can't do anything about it.
Hold on, you have with Gambit, he literally betrayed the X-Men by helping the Marauders find the Morlocks. That's a huge thing, and but, he gets pushed out of the team.
But I was actually going back to the clan of thieves or the Guild of Thieves versus the Guild of Assassins back in New Orleans. That's where I was going with that. But yeah, I mean, his family, he basically betrayed his family. He was supposed to like marry, or actually, he did marry somebody, and Belladonna. Yeah,
but I'm saying with that reveal where you find out the Gambit was kind of the essential part of the Marauders finding the Morlocks. I mean, the person that tells him to fuck off is Rogue. Like the person that he's in love with is pretty much like, just get the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. Like you're off the team. You're fucking out of my life.
And Rogue, I think you were going to touch on this. Is that she was a super villain, and she absorbs Carol Danvers' powers.
Yep.
Absorbs all the Ms. Marvel powers. Comes to the X-Men because she doesn't, because it's driving her insane. She has an entire another person's memories and thoughts and life in her head. And she can't, it's driving her insane. She can't get any peace. Mm-hmm. She goes to Charles Xavier and he's like, please help me find some balance.
And then that was an interesting thing that's one of the reasons Claremont's run so strong is he'll take somebody that was a villain and have her come to the X-Men, and they let her in, but you can tell everybody's like, you know, a year ago we were fighting her, now she's part of the team. Can we trust her? And it takes this whole arc with Wolverine to actually make the X-Men trust her. And, like, that was, you know, that's Claremont's some of his best writing.
Well, and X-Men, that's happened both ways a number of times where people switch sides. I mentioned before the break that Cyclops, in all new X-Men, he ends up teaming up with Magneto to the point where, like, Magneto's like, dude, you got to chill out. Like, you're getting a little bit too hardcore here. And it was a villain in Avengers versus X-Men, which is a great run.
Is it the one with the Phoenix?
The Phoenix Force that gets a number of them at the same time, and they try to rebuild the world they want to see it as. And great read. And all of a sudden, Cyclops is interesting to read. There's a reason why there's not a solo Cyclops run, because no one would buy it. Yeah, they switch back and forth where Magneto's teamed up multiple times with the X-Men to do stuff. I mean,
well, that was going to say, that was an interesting twist is in the 80s they actually had where Professor X actually leaves leaves the X-Men, and Magneto has to be the role of Professor X. And for this happened for a few years, come to find out that he was manipulated, realizes it, turns bad guy again. Mm. But you had a while there where Magneto was in the role of Professor X. Like, so that's some kind of crazy shit happened.
And also in Whedon's run, the White Queen was who was, you know, part of the Hellfire Club, you know, like and how fucked is this? You know, Jean and Cyclops, of course, were an item for the longest time. Jean goes away, Cyclops just starts fucking the White Queen.
it was a little payback because she was kind of fucking around with Wolverine.
I mean, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
He's kind of like, oh, I got another bitch on the side. Now, how do you feel about that? Like,
what about this motherfucker?
It's like she went to Scott when she wanted the loving. She went to Logan when she wanted the hard dicking. That's pretty exactly. much how that worked.
But also, so Scott saw his opportunities. Like, all right, this blonde bitch wants my cock.
We mentioned it on the Civil War episode that apparently the White Queen and Stark had a thing that was mentioned in the Civil War run. They had a when nobody's anybody's kind of fuck buddy situation that they had with each other. So, yeah, White Queen, you know, she had her time.
She got around.
She apparently gets it.
See, the problem is you got Jean Grey and Emma, who are both telepaths. So not as he like fucking, but like they know what's going on with that whole shit.
That's probably why they go for the simple-minded fucker.
That's what I'm saying. Like, do you have any telepathic ability, or like, are we cool?
Well, not only that,
do you have any psi shields or anything that can block out my powers? No. Okay, cool.
If you're a psychic and you're dating like an intelligent person, their mind's gonna be running a million miles a minute all the time. You're not gonna see Jean Grey dating Reed Richards. Like that would drive her insane.
That is true.
So they go to the dumb jock guy where he's just like, my eyes are lasers. You know, that's just all he's thinking.
He's charging up his lasers.
He's like, I wonder what my boyfriend's thinking. Claw man, make me angry. You know, then it's fine. It's fine.
But in that respect, in the Marvel Universe, how did that work for her and Tony Stark in the Civil War run?
They were just fucking.
Just casual fucking.
That what it was. Now that she could get into his head, and he's a fucking genius.
Yeah, but they're just fucking. Like it's not a matter of it affecting the relationship because all they're doing is fucking. And I'm pretty sure Tony Stark, part of the reason that he likes sex so much is because it distracted him from thinking about all the other shit when he was fucking.
Mm-hmm.
It was the one time where he could shut everything else down because, as a man, I can say that when I'm having sex, I'm going wee. Like, that's pretty much all I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm kind of just focused on the vagina.
I really don't need to hear about you having sex. Just as much as you don't want to even think about me having
sex. I'm more disturbed when he says we.
I think of a monkey in, like, a circus.
I say it in my head. I don't, like...
All right. I literally just saw we, and I was concerned for the
people. If you actually do that during sex, then I...
You guys show up accidentally early for a podcast where I give you the wrong time, and all of a sudden you're walking up, and you just hear, we! Oh, well, I guess we're not podcasting.
I'm leaving. Sorry. I'm out. Peace.
Done, son!
So yeah, they've gone back and forth, and they've changed sides on who's what. I mean, a good example is the Maximoffs.
Ooh, yeah, the Maximoffs.
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. I mean, they're Magneto's kids, and they weren't always good, and they've jumped back and forth on both sides of it.
They made Pietro a badass at one point. I forget when that was. Like almost the point where like Magneto was looking at Pietro, going, "Dude, you've gone too far."
Now, out of the Maximoffs, which one's which one's the favorites? You like Scarlet Witch, you like Quicksilver?
I'm a Scarlet Witch person.
I'm kind of going Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
There's a run on X-Factor, where they have Quicksilver and he's a dick to everybody. But they explain the reason he's a dick to everybody is because to him, he's always moving so fast. So literally somebody just, you know, walking towards him takes forever. Mm-hmm. So he's just impatient all the fucking time, and it makes him the way he is.
Kind of like in the movie.
Everything is, he just does it that quickly. So if he's, you know, waiting for somebody, it's fucking forever, even if they're just walking to the next room. Yeah. So I kind of like that interpretation where he's kind of a prick, but in the same instance, there's a reason for it.
Yeah, like Poppy brought up, could you just imagine sitting there, all right, it's like 5 steps, bro. It's taking so long.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
dude, hurry up.
What's taking you so long to walk across the 14 by 11 room? I don't get it.
One of the cool things that I thought they did in the 2000s with the X-Men is that they brought Namor the Submariner into the fold.
I didn't think about bringing that up. Yeah.
And the fact that you don't think about it because Namor is the first mutant. He is the first mutant. His parents, his father was a surface dweller. His mother was an Atlantean. He technically is a mutant. And they finally acknowledged that. I want to say after Civil War, like in the Dark Reign, the Dark Reign era, I think that's when the X-Men had moved out to San Francisco and they had this island out in the bay And it's like,
that's
yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, yeah. So Namor's in it. And people were like, Submariner's a murderer. Yeah, but he's a mutant. He's kind of like, yeah, we'll overlook all that shit. But he's actually one of us. So he's a mutant. So, yeah, if you have a problem with him, you have a problem with us.
X-Men kind of did that a lot, though, that they'd be like, oh, yeah, this person was fucking evil as shit and killed people or, like, just didn't know how about their powers, so they killed a bunch of people. No, but cool. Like, we got him now, so cool. And everybody would be like, yeah, I guess cool.
You know, yeah, if you say he's cool, I guess he's cool.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you're going to vouch for him, then I guess he's all right by me. But, you know, I'm going to keep one eye open.
But the X-Men did go into the cosmic a little bit. We mentioned the Landra and all that. And Phoenix Saga kind of gets into that a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. And they've kind of gone back and forth with different storylines into the cosmic. But that's one thing that kind of makes me sad with all that Marvel's doing, that there's an opportunity to, if X-Men came in, they could be one of the groups that could do both the terrestrial and the space stuff.
They could,
yeah.
Absolutely.
If they did something with the Imperial Guard of the Shi'ar, which is basically the Marvel version of Legion of Superheroes, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But I was also a big fan of the Imperial Guard of the Shi'ar.
Yeah.
And just the amount of different characters. And it turns out they all have, they explained this in one of the recent Avengers, that there are, even one of those characters dies, there's another one that takes its place, so, except for Gladiator. No, I think even Gladiator. If Gladiator dies, there's another Gladiator take its place. If Smasher dies, there's another Smasher.
I just want the Shi'ar to show up so that Xavier can get a little bit of Tang. Like, it's been so long.
Like, the crazy hair.
The closest that we've gotten is he makes out a little, and then he erases the chick's mind and she barely remembers the kiss. Like, that's the closest that he's gotten to getting
laid. Like, hasn't been laid since Moira McTaggart.
Moira, and that was a long time ago.
And then kid ends up being an autistic kid who fucking rips apart the fabric of space and time. Yes.
I mean, there are certain parts where Xavier's a little bit too hard-edged on the way that he runs the team and everything, and ends up, you know, handing it over to Cyclops and everything. I think part of that is that he just needed to get laid. Like, he's got, like, you know, 30 years of buildup.
Imagine
30 years?
No. Like, no.
Like, that would be crazy.
The question is, even if it works, even. Like, yeah.
It wouldn't work at that point.
And then it was
probably all day. It'd be like 40-year-old virgin where you just wake up and it just go down. It's like...
No, but I mean, as far as with the back...
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily fuck with the blood vessels.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on feeling, you know, as well.
He's a telepath. He can figure it out some way.
You just make it move with his mind.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. Yeah.
And then it just wasn't anybody. It was a space bird lady.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what the Shi'ar are basically. They're bird people.
And you know what? Scarlet Witch fell in love with, like, a weird cybernetic human person thing.
That
the
Shi'ar are bird people. Babies with.
Yeah,
I get that, but... Yeah. That's her name in that's Hawkgirl's name in DC's Legends of Tomorrow is Shi'ara.
Shi'ara. She's a Shi'ara.
No, they're
called the Shi'ar.
When Vandal Savage calls her by her name, he says Shi'ara.
But they're called the Shi'ar.
So they add an ah at the end of it. God damn it.
It's the same
fucking.
It's totally different.
Totally different.
Dude, fuck off. All right?
By the way.
It's like Marvel's like ding, 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 ding. And DC's like ding, 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 ding.
Come on. Okay. Come on. We're talking.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
We're talking about, you know.
So DC's an ice and Marvel is
I think you're reading way too much into it. Plus, Hot Girl's been around since 1941. So there's that, too.
We're talking about DC that has Captain Marvel. And then Marvel that has Captain Marvel. Like, all right. You know, right. Like,
I can explain that, but this isn't really the time or place for it. No, I know this. I know the story behind it. It's all copyright issues.
Yeah, no, I know that. I've heard the story. Yeah, I think from you.
Put a dash and it's all good, all right?
Well, no. Yeah, well, because in 68, they had let the copyright lapse. So Marvel jumped on it.
Well, Vell is his last name.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mar-Vell.
Mr. Vell.
It's Mr. Mar. Yeah.
I mean, he had kids. I mean, most of them actually have become Captain Marvel at some point. There was Genus Vell and the other one who was a lesbian. She was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's
I just don't remember the
name. Superhero name. The other one who's a lesbian.
I don't remember her name, and I'm not bothering to look it up on my phone.
She was in Guardians?
Yeah, she was part of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, point. that was like Avengers, where there was a rotating cast of people that were part of it. I don't think Cosmo was officially a Guardian at any point, but...
But yeah,
everybody's
been
an Avenger at one time.
Yeah. Hell, Beast was an Avenger. Actually, I remember Beast more as an Avenger than I do as an X-Man.
Well, because
the first one I got into was
Dark Phoenix saga, and that he was an Avenger during that run.
Yeah, and he was blue and furry because he had to drink the formula that he developed while working at the Roxxon Corporation.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was going to bring up another X-Men that is a favorite of mine to read is Beast. Beast is he's fun. He's good. He's a good times.
Oh my stars and garters!
Well, that's that kind of balancing that I was talking about. I know. That Beast, Hank is an incredibly intelligent human being, but he's got this savage side to him that has become like physical. It's kind of Hulk style, a little bit of that. But the difference is that as Banner is going the opposite direction, where he gets a little bit more control and a little bit more control of the Hulk, Beast is going the other direction, where the further on it goes, the more the Beast takes over and he becomes less in control of himself. And
especially when he starts to stay in form and doesn't go back to Hank. He's just like, I'm just a Beast and still go to court. Remember, there was a couple issues I read where he's in court and he's like, if you prick us, do we not bleed? And like, he's pleading his case as Beast. I'm like, oh, fuck. That's
which is why, for you
why
know,
the blue furry guys made a point, right?
As much as everybody kind of shits on X3, Kelsey Grammer as Beast was just kind of
was really awesome. And he was in Days of Future Past, too. We can skip X3. Yeah. He had that one little cameo in Days of Future Past. So.
A little known fact, actually, is that Sesame Street is in the X-Men universe, and Beast is actually Grover's older brother that played football in high school. It's just so ridiculous. It was a one-off like comic that came out with Serial or something that they talk about that, but totally.
That's a crossover we're waiting for.
That's a crossover.
Oh my goodness.
X-Men versus Sesame
Street. Hey, seeing as I believe
that's the name of the episode.
Disney owns Henson. Disney owns Marvel. It can happen.
This can totally happen.
Because Henson, Sesame Street.
Yeah.
Look, you get Beast and you get Kelsey Grammer to play Beast, in a later X-Men series, and then you get him to show up as Beast on Sesame Street, and then he and Grover get into a sibling fight, and then you're good to go.
I mean, he's not doing anything else right now.
And then you do 50 minutes, and then you do 30 minutes of Near and Far. Near Far.
Yes. Yes.
So Beast would be near.
Yeah.
He'd be like,
and then Grover runs. Then Grover runs away from him, and is like,
"Holy fuck!" Oh, woo!
All right, we're about at the end of this, and I can't see a better way to end it either. So, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Geeks Under the Influence. We're going to be back next week with an episode all about the X-Men movies, and of course, like Deadpool and stuff too. That's part of the whole X-Men, the mutant universe. And a little bit of a review on our feelings on Age of Apocalypse, the new X-Men movie. So stay tuned, and we will see you next week with another amazing episode. Follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music. Follow us at GUIPodcast.com, where you can also find our episodes and links to our Facebook and Tumblr and Twitter and all of our social media stuff. Join the conversation. Let us know what you want to hear on future episodes, what you liked about the past episodes, and just be part of the GUI. Yeah, and as always, join us or die.
Shut the fuck up, Hobbit. Join us.